Hello, this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
I was going to say it then.
Oh, don't. You? I thought that we were going to have that so slick then. I was going to just go bang, probably, and then you'd carry on.
Next week is the week. Perfect next week. Perfect.
Oh. How are you then, Lewis?
I'm alright, how are you?
Yeah, I've still got Zardoz running through my mind.
Zardoz!
That's had more of an impact on me than I realised. All week I've just been... Images from that film have been popping in my head. And
which particular bit?
Just the big flying head.
I can't.
Wherever I look, I see that flying head on a baby's smiling face, or a
I can't get Sean Connery in a wedding dress out of my head. That's the image that keeps popping back into my mind. I just can't take him seriously now that I know.
Now Zardoz exists.
Exactly, just him in a wedding dress with a moustache.
I feel, and I just, every so often, I've just been really tempted just to suddenly just shout out, Zardoz! just on the tube or something, just to see the reaction it gets.
Zardoz says, get off the tube.
Well, I just start doing that, just to, you know, had a bit of fizz to my day-to-day life.
Start all your emails like that.
Zardoz proclaims. It'll be great if you can make the events.
Exactly.
Your penis is good. Oh, sorry. Gun is good, penis is evil.
Yada, yada, yada. Regards.
Zardoz. Anyway.
Anyway, we've already strayed off the point. We haven't even started.
I know. So welcome to a podcast. Is it 14?
Oh, don't even start. I don't know. 14?
No, 15.
Oh. Why did you even bring that up?
I was so confident I knew that it was right, but I think...
I think it's 14.
Is it Bubba Hotep 13?
Oh, look, okay. Skip to the end.
Skip to the end. Right. So welcome to podcast... Nom, nom, nom. And and today we are going to be discussing quite a big film, a serious film.
Yeah, The Godfather.
The Godfather.
You know, it's no Zardoz, but...
Obviously not. Doesn't have Marlon Brando running around in a nappy.
They can't all be gold, I guess.
No. So we're going to have to force ourselves to sit down and watch The Godfather. Now, this is a film I had never seen.
Yeah, so this is one of my recommendations.
Yeah.
So I can't believe you've never seen it, actually. How old are you now? 90?
95, something like that. I forget. I'm as old as time. I think there are probably two main reasons why I haven't seen it. One, it's length. Just 2 hours, 48 minutes. That's a long time just to, you know, accidentally catch a film and sit down and watch it. So I would have had to have gone out my way to sit down and watch it. And two...
And yet you were quite happy to sit down and watch the Sound of Music.
Yeah.
Nearly 3 hours.
Yeah, well, not quite happy. If you remember, that was one of your recommendations as well.
No, well, I hadn't seen it either.
All my films that I pick are really short. Yeah, like Dracula, Hour and 20, Bubba Hotep, about an hour and 20.
So you've got a very short attention span.
Yes, definitely. It was just because it was quite a long film. And
I know what you mean, though. It's the same. I'm the same with, like, you know, Goodfellas as well. That's another long. That's a good one. We got to watch that.
There is
another 3 hour one.
I've never really been that interested in gangster films. I mean, before our
with your gangster upbringing.
Yeah, let me clarify.
It's too close to real life.
Exactly. I know what it's really like on the mean streets. Now, not that I didn't like gangster films. I didn't like what I thought gangster films were going to be like. Mm. I just had certain preconceptions, presumptions of what a gangster film was going to be like, and I just wasn't really interested in seeing them. I mean, the only one I'd watched before I'd seen The Godfather, like, of that kind of, I suppose, classic American gangster film, was Scarface.
Oh, it's a very different kind of film.
Yeah, very,
very
different.
I
mean, good in its own way, but really ludicrous and over top in many other ways.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very, very different kind of film to Scarface.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. And so I think I just kind of those factors combined, its length, wasn't really that interested. Mm. I mean, maybe if I'd heard a spaceship appeared halfway through, or Marlon Brando turns out to be a vampire towards the end, I would have probably sat down and watched it. But without those enticements, I was just like, ooh, a long, worthy gangster film. And I don't know. I don't know if it's an overhang from being a kid, but I sometimes still have, when someone really praises a film and uses words like powerful and moving, there's a little voice that just says, "And boring, probably." Don't you know? Do you get that as well?
Yeah,
is that just me?
Yeah.
And I mean,
every Oscar winner ever, I'm kind of like, oh,
well, that's a separate case, because most Oscar winning films, yeah, the film that gets the most Oscars tends to not be the best film, just the Oscar film.
The Oscar film, yeah. Oh, it deals with a mental disability, right? Oscar nomination.
So I guess that, you know, all those factors combined, which really sort of put me off. And even when we were going to watch it for this podcast, I kept putting it off. I watched it yesterday, the last possible minute, because I was like, I've got to sit down and just spend 3 hours.
Oh, it's such a chore, isn't it, to watch film?
I know. But saying that, about 6 months ago, I remember I caught the opening monologue. The film opens with Marlon Brando and a guy playing an undertaker. And he just has that really great speech.
Yeah,
fantastic. Really draws you in.
I believe
well
in America.
Yeah, really interesting. Really well shot. Really kind of dark and fantastic. And I remember that opening and I watched that. And I was like, oh, this is really good. But it was starting at 5 past 11 and it was a work night. I was like,
5 past 11.
Am I going to stay up to 2 in the morning just to watch this film? And I was like, no, I think I really want to watch it. This looks good. I'll watch it another time. And of course, now this series of excellent podcasts has come along.
If we do say so ourselves.
And I mean, I know it was one of your recommendations, but I do remember saying, oh, I've not seen Godfather 2. You've got to watch that.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So... Do we really need to explain the plot or do a pitch for it? I guess we should.
We should, just in case, because there might be some people out there who've not watched it. So, just in a nutshell, the Godfather is played by Marlon Brando, and he is the head of a family, a crime family.
A mafioso family.
Mafioso family, and they're based in America. And the story is basically about how he passes the reins to his younger son, Michael. And all about the conflicts within the family and the conflicts with other families.
Yeah.
His son is very reluctant to take on the mantle of kind of joining the gang. And there's a lot to it, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a huge amount to it. I suppose you could really just sum it up as a man, Michael, I suppose, losing his innocence, so he's sliding into a life that he thought he was going to escape, that his father wanted to escape, that everyone presumed he would be free from. Mm. And then just forces drag him in.
It's very interesting. It's very believable as well, I think, in the sense that you can see that how you could easily slip into this way of life through real kind of thought of your own.
Yeah, I suppose if that's that kind of lifestyle around you, then yeah, it's very difficult to not be part of it. That wasn't really a snappy pitch, was it?
It wasn't, no. Okay, Marlon Brando... Playing an old man?
Yeah, let me think. Fat man commits crimes, hijinks ensue. And I believe that's exactly
where you go with
how Francis Ford Coppola pitched it to Paramount.
Oh, I won't do my Francis Ford Coppola impression.
Good. Well, it's got a huge cast, an amazing cast as well. Absolutely huge.
I thought you were going to continue with the fat jokes then.
No.
Huge cast. Huge. Most of it Marlon Brando.
We can't go through all of them. But I suppose the main people in the family, the main ones to really point out, Marlon Brando playing Don Vito Corleone, the Godfather himself, the titular character.
You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding. I love it. Yeah, I won't continue. That is going to be the last impression.
That's the other thing I think that put me off watching. It's just the series of impressions that I've had to put up with over the years from various people. This is the Godfather. Like,
Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes.
It's one of those things, isn't it? How all men of a certain age, all men have a certain series of impressions they feel they can do. So I mean, it's like Godfather is one.
I can't do any. I'd like to point out. But it's classic, though. You must have known what the film was about before you watched it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's been pastiche so many times.
Yeah,
exactly. Even by the Animaniacs.
We'll talk about that towards the end. But yeah, I agree. I really want to talk about that. We've also got Al Pacino playing the youngest son, Michael. No, yeah, he is the youngest son, Michael.
That's right.
And Al Pacino is the son who wants to escape the life, who hopes to escape the life of crime. And it's not like he's under any illusions. He knows what the family does. He knows what the business is. But he kind of doesn't really want anything to do with it.
That's right. And then there's James Caan, who plays Sonny. He's good, isn't he, James Caan?
He is good, isn't he? Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. It doesn't really strike you as an Italian man.
No. He looks not like the others, doesn't he?
But he's a great performance. And for a second, I didn't recognise him. At the beginning, I didn't actually recognise him.
Mm.
I suppose I always think of James Caan as he more or less as he is now, or as he has been over the last sort of 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
So to see him like at the peak of his powers as a young man.
Well, I think he got better as he got older, I think.
Well, I suppose so. Yeah. Well,
but yeah, to see him as a young
man. In a different
man.
Way, yeah. And nice. I suppose Robert Duvall playing the other kind of, although not officially a brother, an adopted brother.
Yeah, that's right.
Tom Hagen. And again, I suppose they're all fantastic. Yeah, there's really not any bad performances.
Exactly. We're not going to mention all of them, but the other mention should be Diane Keaton as Kay Adams.
Although, I mean, really, she has an important role, but she's absent for huge swathes of the film.
Yeah, definitely. She only really comes into it properly at the end.
Yeah, so she's there at the beginning, and then she's sort of. You see her a couple of times in the middle, and then she's there at the end. Mm. But anyway, yeah, so a massive sprawling cast of loads and loads of different family, of loads of different characters, and yeah, it's like a soap opera almost. Yeah, I can see how again, The Sopranos, which I've never seen, on my list to sit down and watch. But you can totally see how they've spun out a kind of the idea of a crime family over a how many series did The Sopranos have? Like 7 or 8 series? Because there's just so much intrigue and arguments. It's a fertile ground to mine.
But, yeah, and also there's so many imitators as well after The Godfather. There was just a spate of mafia movies that came after this.
No, The Goodfellas came from that, didn't it?
Yeah, Goodfellas. Sergio Leone did Once Upon a Time in America.
Yeah, yeah.
I think originally he wanted to direct The Godfather.
Yeah, I think he was up for to direct it first of all. Yeah.
What other ones? Mean Streets. God, there's loads of them.
Yeah.
Loads.
And they've all set the tone, I suppose, of taking it quite seriously and not having. I think gangster flicks before that were all about action and gum, characters.
Humphrey Bogart.
Brawling and running around and shooting. Whereas this really looked at the characters of those committing those acts and how the effects it had on just day-to-day life and family life. And what I think they convincingly could depict it as a business, as a organisation, as a company with certain rules and guidelines and boundaries.
That's it. And violence was often quite a last resort as well.
Mm.
But you
they
know,
only ate their own. That's what they used to say.
Who said that?
Well, that's what I used to say about East End gangsters or people who forget they didn't and they would hurt other people. But shall we do the trivia quiz? I always want to get this out of the way early because we end up talking about a lot of...
Yeah, I think I've already mentioned one thing, so...
right.
Trivia!
Trivia!
Trivia! Alright, you go first.
Oh, okay. So, I'm sure you know this one, Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Marlon Brando famously won an Oscar for this film, but he refused to take it. Why did he refuse to accept the Oscar?
Oh, my God. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I really don't know.
All right, okay.
I imagine probably because he didn't like the studio, but I don't know.
All right, so you didn't like the studio.
I know he didn't get paid much for the film.
Anyway. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did have a falling out with that. Name one other actor who was up for
Don Corleone.
Corleone's role.
Oh,
who was going to play Don Corleone?
Oh, I know there was
other than Marlon Brando. Oh. You can just name one.
Laurence Olivier.
All right. And now, George Lucas actually did part of the film. Do you know
what
part?
Did he?
Yeah, well, okay. Well, you're not going to know what part of the film. You take a guess. There is a sequence.
Okay.
A scene that he basically did for... uncredited, he did for a couple of...
Okay. Okay, I'm just going to say the funeral scene.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And your questions for me,
right.
Please, Lewis. Oh. Oh, we didn't do trivia! I didn't even think about it. Oh, well.
I'll tell you what, I'll record a jingle and I'll insert it in there before.
That's not going to happen.
It might happen, you never know.
Yeah, there was a very slim chance it might happen.
All right, what's... first question. This one's a little hard. What was the name of the racehorse that ended up in the bed? Was it A, Khartoum, B, Tivoli, or C, Tatenko?
I'm going to say C, Tatenko.
Okay. What's the name of the restaurant that Michael makes his first hit in?
Ah, I can see it. Is it Joey's? Oh, no, I don't forget it. I can see a V, a green V. Oh, I'll say Joey's. I don't think it is that.
Okay. And I Believe in America is the first line. We talked about this a bit already. Who is it spoken by?
The character's name?
Yeah, the character's name. Oh. I could give you multiple choice, but I think you've already said the answer, so...
Well, it's The Undertaker. I don't know his name, though.
Okay.
That's all.
That'll do. That's
okay. All right. All right, so you, the answers to the questions that I gave you. Why did Marlon Brando refuse his Oscar? He was angry about the depiction of Native Americans in films.
Native Americans?
Yes, and he sent a...
Italian Americans.
Not Italian Americans, Native Americans. He sent a lady called Sachin Littlefeather. I've probably pronounced Sachin wrong, but not Littlefeather. Along to collect the award in it, or to go in his place. And when she was stepped up to collect the award, she made a speech. And it was Roger Moore who tried to give her the Oscar. Just imagine Roger Moore awkwardly standing there.
Oh dear. Hello, Alan.
The second name in our actor up for Marlon Brando's role was Laurence Olivier. There were quite a few, actually.
Yeah, I saw
various people have been named. One that really stood out for me was Ernest... what's his name? Borgnine.
Oh, yeah.
It was the guy in Airwolf.
Oh, yeah. I think he would have been quite good, though, in a way.
Kind of, yeah.
Have the gravity.
I thought, but yeah.
It wouldn't have been quite as good a film.
But did you know why Laurence Olivier turned down the role?
I think he was quite ill, wasn't he?
Well, his agent said he was really ill, he's not going to work in it, and he'll probably be dead within the next few months, and he lived for another 18 years.
Worst agent ever.
yeah. And what part of the film did George Lucas oversee? He actually put together the, they call it the mattress sequence. It's where you see after Michael has done the hit in the restaurant,
yeah,
and he leaves, and then there's a kind of a montage sequence almost with newspaper headlines coming forward, and you see people being arrested, police arresting people. Yeah. He did that whole sequence.
It's gonna be a montage.
Do you know they were actually going to have what's the word? Sound of Music had one.
intermission.
Yeah. Between that, the intermission was going to take place there. It was going to, and then that montage sequence would sort of just allow people to catch up.
Everyone could get some ice cream. Well, it's a 3-hour film. They probably could have done with an intermission.
Yeah, no, true.
Maybe Sound of Music had it right.
So you had 1 point.
Oh, that's disappointing. Right. Okay. You're one. What was the name of the horse that ended up in the bed? It was Khartoum.
Oh. Do you know what the first thing I thought? I'm going to ruin something for you now. But there is a very funny...
Good, I'm glad. Can't wait.
Well, I know that at the moment you receive for Christmas the Alan Partridge autobiography. I've just listened to the audiobook version of that. And there's a very funny bit towards the end where he talks about getting better by horse riding with a horse called Treacle. And before you gave me the options, the first thing I thought was like, is it treacle? And then when you started giving me options, I realised where I took the word treacle from. So.
Oh, I'm looking forward to reading that book. Thanks for spoiling it. Okay, what's the name of the restaurant that Michael makes his first in? It's Louise.
Louise! Not Joey's. I knew it was a...
Damn. It was another Italian-American name. Yeah. I believe in America was spoken by Bonacera, the Undertaker. Yeah, okay. You're right.
All right, brilliant. So one all.
Draw. Have we done the score? We need to work out the scores.
No, I still haven't done that. Oh, so maybe someone at home has done it.
Unlikely.
Awkward silence. Everyone listening to this right now is like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. So, standout performances. Well, it's difficult in a... The standout performances really... simply because of the down to those actors who have the most screen time, not really because anyone really was far better, but of a far better performance. You know, you obviously think of Marlon Brando and Al Pacino, but that's simply because they're on screen the most.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I have to say though, Marlon Brando, by a mile, he stands out. The gravitas in this film is just amazing.
You do miss him when he's not there.
Definitely.
When he, when he's hurt and he's, for a big chunk of the film actually, he's essentially just not there. He's in hospital, in bed, unconscious. You do miss him.
Exactly.
You can understand why the rest of the characters in the film are all kind of like running around like headless chickens. You do feel this some vacuum of power, of presence, of everyone, and everyone kind of trying to fill it. Al Pacino trying to fill it. Sonny trying to fill it.
That's it, you know. Sonny tries to do it, but he's just not up to the job. And yeah, it's just really interesting, you know. Every time he's on the screen, he's just like a magnet for kind of your eyes. You just can't take your eyes off him. And one of my favourite scenes actually was his death scene. I mean, we can give it away that he doesn't make it to the end of the film. And yeah, I think that's just an amazing kind of sequence. Apparently, he didn't learn any lines for that. He just did all completely...
Yeah, all ad-libbed. Yeah, I saw that as well.
But yeah, really...
Very natural.
Very natural. And it was interesting as well. It's the way he has a very peaceful death, despite the fact of all the violence around
him. Yeah, of all the crimes. And yeah, because you feel like he's an honourable man, despite the fact that he's been gambling...
The second film kind of really bigs up on that idea that he's come from a respectable background and he's all about respect and kind of and that kind of thing. And it contrasts it with the modern day where it's all becoming about money and violence. But I won't give too much away because you're probably going to watch
it. Yeah, no, because obviously you've not seen the second one. Yeah, it's funny. Sorry, just to very quickly go back to... I've noticed something that both of us keep doing. We keep like referring to some characters by their character name and other characters by their actor name. We should try and start... Because I just said, you know, Al Pacino's trying to fill the vacuum. And Sonny, as if rather than James Caan. But anyway, so... No, it's... Yeah, it really is. But then again, Al Pacino is brilliant as Michael as well. Because you... totally are sold on his descent from the good boy, the good one, the one who's trying to escape it, to taking on essentially the godfather role at the end, or becoming the godfather.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially the way he just develops so well over the film. He kind of is so fresh and fresh-faced at the beginning, but with kind of like brooding on his past, and you know, he doesn't like telling his girlfriend about all the awful things that the family have done, but by the end he's just calculating... really kind of ruthless and calculating. And it's a gradual change. It's really, really interesting to see that character develop over the course of the film. And the real turning point is that moment in the hospital halfway through when the Don has been injured. And that's, you could see that's the moment. And it's so well done.
It's a fantastically tense scene as well, though, isn't it? Yeah,
really good.
Yeah, just, I've never seen, I've never felt so tense of seeing a man and a little old lady pushing a bed into essentially a cupboard. Oh, yeah, just the fact, and there's no one there. It's not even like you know that there. You know, people are coming, and it's just, oh, come on, gotta get hide, gotta get this rid of this.
It's one of the great tricks of cinema, isn't it? The rule always is, what you don't see is scarier than what you do see.
Yeah.
And the fact that you know there's something coming, but you don't know where they are, you don't know where they're going to come from.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
That's more scary than seeing, you know, cut shots of people running upstairs, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, really good. And when you're saying the turning point is in hospital, it's funny, I don't know if it was done, but I presume it was done on purpose, but he doesn't, other than his military hat, because the Al Pacino, Michael, Al Pacino's character, is a war hero, because that's the other kind of suggestion, that he's the good guy, he's the goody. He wears a military hat, I think, at one point, but other than that, he doesn't wear a hat. All the other characters wear hats. He's the only one not to wear a hat until he becomes the... essentially comes back to America to take on his father's role.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, yeah, the hat, definitely, Sonny, he starts to look like them. He starts to dress like them as well.
Yeah.
Whereas before, they were all in sharp suits, white shirts. You know, he was kind of like almost in a... almost like a tweed jacket earlier on, a kind of coloured shirt and a sort of walk. He looked like a school teacher. And then by the end, he looks like a gangster.
Yeah, it's clever.
Wise guy.
You but, come to me. Oh, no, no.
Don't. But, and Al Pacino totally, as you say, just sells you on that, just that descent. I suppose, you know, the fall of man from angel to devil. and he looks like a complete, you know, he looks complete different. You know, like his hair is kind of different. All these little things just signify.
It's such a well-made film. It really, you can tell there's been it's a labour of love for the director. Of course, and like, everyone involved.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stanley Kubrick said it was the, if not the best film ever made, it was certainly the best cast film ever made.
You know, it's one of those things, it's so long that it's not a film that you often think, oh, right, I've got 3 hours to spare, I'll sit down and watch The Godfather. But once you start watching
it... Yeah, I was engrossed, totally engrossed.
You just can't stop, it's just start to finish, you're like, wow. Even though I've seen it before several times, it's just, once you start watching it, you're just hooked to the end.
Well, I think, it's definitely a film that's worth a rewatch, actually. Once you sort of see the end, you sort of feel, you know, where it's going. You can, I think there's enough there to really kind of, you know, so you can actually see it unfold, see the signifiers, see the sort of suggestions.
Mm, yeah, definitely. So what are your favourite bits?
Well, we've already mentioned the hospital scene. I think it's fantastic, just the tenseness of it. Again, you've mentioned already, Marlon Brando's death scene, just with his grandson running through the sort of tomato plants, just playing around.
I love the way that's shot with him just kind of out of focus and the little kid just trying to urge him to get up. I think it's just fantastic. Yeah. Really, really well shot.
Yeah. I quite like just the big wedding. It made me want a big Italian wedding.
Yeah.
I thought it was almost worth trying to find an Italian girl to marry, just so I get a massive big Italian wedding.
Yeah. My favourite bit of that was, is it Luca Brasi? He's rehearsing his lines because he didn't expect to get an invite and then he's going... You know, Godfather, thanks. Oh, I can't do the lines, but yeah.
Yeah, you honour me by inviting you to your weddings, to your daughter's wedding. You honour, I know you are a busy man, so I shall now leave you. Okay. Do you know, actually, the guy who played him was so nervous about being in a scene with Marlon Brando that... That bit where he fluffs his lines, they just kept them. Coppola kept it in, and then shot the scenes where he's learning his lines because he thought that just it worked so well, and that nervousness and awkwardness just was pitch perfect for that scene.
Oh, that's interesting.
Then they decided to like go. And he was like, "All right," and he added the sequence where you see him like practicing before he speaks to speaks to the Don. But, it's great, isn't it? Yeah,
it is good.
But yeah, that whole kind of wedding bit where really they're at the height of their powers, all of them, and the Don is right in the height of his power there, isn't he? The centre of attention. Everyone's going to him, asking for favours, you know, looking snappy in his wedding clothes, and his daughter's getting married.
Yeah.
And
it's a great, it's a huge, huge kind of scene, like massive. Well, many people in that.
Yeah, I think they just, I read like, Francis Ford Coppola just got loads of Italian-American extras and just said, here's some homemade wine, here's some traditional Italian food, just enjoy yourselves and we'll just film you enjoying yourself, just treat it as a real wedding. So that's why everyone does look like they're properly having fun.
Interesting. One of my other favourite scenes is the bit set in Sicily, where Michael's kind of in exile. And I thought they were really, really well shot. There's such an amazing contrast to the film's, the kind of film shot in America.
Now, I don't know about you, but the way we move over to Sicily, it's and where the character Marcus is kind of in exile for a while. You see the Don lying in bed, and he's told about Michael, and you sort of he's upset because he wanted him to be the good son, and yeah. now he's not, and he kind of turns away, and then it kind of fades to Sicily. For a second, I actually thought we were seeing kind of a flashback to to his youth, perhaps, or to when he was, you know, before he came to America. It wasn't until suddenly he was like, oh, no, it's not. It's actually, we're just seeing Al Pacino in Sicily, Michael in Sicily.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting. Well, as I said earlier, like in The Godfather Part 2, we do see the Don growing up in Sicily.
Maybe that's why. Maybe I've just kind of picked that, without even seeing it, I've kind of picked that up. That's going to be in there. I think, you know, I'm sure, obviously, I've seen clips, I'm sure. It is a prequel, isn't it? I'm sure I've seen a bit where
The Godfather Part 2, it's a prequel and a sequel, because there's some scenes where Michael is continuing as the Godfather.
I see,
and there's some scenes where it's split into two with Robert De Niro playing the Don
as a young guy.
Yeah.
So, I'll have to give it a watch. as you say, it does really kind of go from like late 1940s, early 1950s New York to suddenly this painfully kind of sunny Sicilian countryside. Mm. Although I think it's not actually Sicily because it was too.
Wasn't it? I thought it was in Sicily.
No, I think. Apparently they were saying it was too developed, actual Sicily now, so they had to do it in like sort of parts of rural Italy.
Oh, okay.
I may be wrong. It's almost like it spins off on its own little kind of little own film there, isn't there?
Yeah, it's such a contrast.
Yeah, it's so strange.
The second unit director got carried away.
Yeah, well, it's like suddenly a whole new cast of characters. Yeah, not to go into too much detail, but Michael kind of gets involved in situations there. Things happen to him. And it's all happening completely separate. And, like, he doesn't, you know, the characters in back in New York don't have really any idea of what's going on there, what's happening to him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can't really talk too much about that bit, like giving too much away. But, yeah, it's a really good little sequence.
So, what do you think, when I was reading about the film, talk about actual kind of mafia and gangster involvement in the film. Well, actually, some of the...
I don't know what the question is.
Some of the... Well, what do you think, did you read anything about that? About the... Apparently there was some...
No, Wikipedia was down.
It's all down on Wednesday. It's a good thing we did it these days. You know, it's going off.
Isn't it going off this week?
101 films will shut down in solidarity with our Wikipedia brothers.
We don't put our podcast on Wednesdays, it's fine.
Exactly. I think it was actually, I was reading about this on the Internet Movie Database. It was talking about how...
they're still up. Scabs.
They are. It was saying how there were rumours of kind of mafia involvement in the actual film, some of the extras.
Oh, you know, I think I read something about this.
Well, funny enough, the guy who plays, what's his name? Johnny Fontaine.
Yeah.
The kind of Frank Sinatra-esque type singer, heavily involved with the mob, and who wants a job on a film, and that's where the famous horse's head sequence comes from.
Yeah. Apparently that was a real horse's head.
Yeah, he got it from a dog and cat food factory,
Which is real.
But
they said that apparently the actor playing the movie boss, they rehearsed it with a fake horse's head, and then for the actual shot they put the real one in, and they didn't tell the guy it was a real horse's head.
The screams were real, yeah. Although, funny enough, because it doesn't look real, does it? It looks fake.
I know. I thought it looked pretty real.
Until I read that, I did presume it was a fake horse's head because it just didn't look quite right to me. But obviously, it was a real horse's head.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch it again now.
It was just all the hair, all the blood.
The blood
in the bed.
The blood. The blood. It's like Dracula again.
Yeah. And the guy who played Johnny Fontaine himself was involved in the mafia, and there was a suggestion that he got that job.
Can we say this? Is this true, or is this...
Well, this is all...
Are we going to get sued for this?
Well, I will say Francis Ford Coppola denied it.
Right.
In 2009, he said it wasn't true.
Okay, so allegedly, this man was involved with the mafia.
It's unlikely they're going to say it, but...
Allegedly.
Yeah, there were rumours, and as I said, he denied it, and Francis Ford Coppola denied it, but the ironic thing was the suggestion he only got that job through pressure from there. So he playing a guy who only gets a job on a film through pressure from the mafia, and in turn he got a job on that film through pressure of the mafia.
See, that's the kind of story that I think is too good to be true.
Yeah, I know that's what you too mean. Good yeah, to be true. I suspect so, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a couple of other... There was one character, I forget who it was now, but he was sort of using the gun, and Francis Ford Coppola had said, oh, are you right to load the barrels? And he just said, yeah. Are you kidding? Yeah, it's a suggestion.
Are you kidding? You're a wise guy.
Yeah, it's weird how that the Godfather. I think films like Goodfellas and all those other films have had an actual impact on sort of mafioso culture.
Mm-hmm.
The mafia members have ended up aping TV characters.
Where were you getting this from?
Well, I read. One of the main
your mafia contacts.
No, one of the main Godfathers the fact they used the term Godfather. Wasn't really exact. And they used the word Don as well. Now there's
Don Estelle.
A lot of top mafiosos use the word Don now, and that was invented for Godfather. Don actually in Italian actually means uncle. But the guy who wrote what's his name, Mario
Puzo.
He didn't speak Italian. He just sounded.
It's me,
good.
Mario.
Yeah, exactly. When Mario came back from Magic. Mushroom Kingdom. The Magic Mushroom Kingdom. And he was like, he wanted to write his experiences down.
Yeah.
And it just, studio involvement, it all got changed. So it went from...
He went back to plumbing.
Yeah. He went back from having a big... What's the guy? Bowser? What's he called?
Bowser.
Big crocodile man. Turtle man. What is he?
I don't know. He's not really specified. We think he might be a dinosaur.
Good. I love the way you said that. We think he might be a dinosaur. A committee of people. And you sat down to
We're looking into it.
Yeah. We'll get back to you ASAP. Well, sorry for just trying to get a genuinely interesting discussion going about the impact of the film on... Yeah, that, right.
I just think you're making it up, to be honest.
I'm not making it up.
You know, you can't always trust Wikipedia to report the truth.
It's a common... That's why, from what I understand anyway...
You get me a mafioso in here, and you tell me.
Why The Sopranos worked, because it showed that the people, those types of people, were heavily influenced.
So you're basing this statement on The Sopranos?
No, I'm basing it on a lot of... Just like they...
State your sources.
A lot of people used to say... I remember reading interviews with various policemen who were sort of in the force in England in the 70s, and they said suddenly people started to act... like people in The Sweeney, things like that. They didn't really act like that. And then once it was on TV, and that kind of created an idea of what people should be like.
And then the 90s, they started acting like the Thin Blue Line.
Yeah, extremely camp guys. a guy who accidentally makes loads of innuendo. My ass is on the line and I don't want to cock up it. Things like that. Yep. Great stuff.
Great stuff.
So Francis Ford Coppola had huge amounts of difficulty with the studio making this film.
Yes.
Lots of arguments.
Can you name a film he hasn't had difficulty with the studio?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't know if this is just standard Coppola behaviour, but it just every time, pretty much every fact I read or every reference to an actor or a scene, it more or less ended with this was almost removed until Francis Ford Coppola threatened to resign. Yeah, it was pretty much the studio was just totally trying to change it. Well, then, interesting, I read that the first edit of the film that he handed in was 15 minutes shorter than the film we see now.
Really?
And the studio sent it back and said, no, we want more sequences. They had more sequences of the family.
Wow, that's interesting. Mm. That's usually the other way around.
Well, you know what? I mean, we always hear of the times where studios change things for the worse.
Mm.
And, directors are very angry with that. And they will say... But, of course, directors will never say, if they get a success on their hands, that
it was really bad
changed.
When I did it.
Yeah, and then the studio stepped in. And I think we mentioned it last week, and I think, I've heard that Donnie Darko... The version that was originally released was really heavily cut to ribbons by the studio, was pushed through in a certain way, was a mass success.
Mm.
He then went off, made his, brought out the director's cut, which I've not seen, but so I've been told is far, far worse than the studio original. It actually ruins what makes Donnie Darko a good film. And it does make you think, the studio, I mean, I think this, you know, Francis Ford Coppola really did face a lot of problems with the studio, and, you know, in terms of casting, in terms of the music, in terms of the plot, and all that. You know, they really wanted more violence, the studio apparently, in the film. So he, the whole bit where the sister, Connie, and her husband, her abusive husband. Yeah. And you know that bit where they had a big argument in the pillar, and she smashes all the crockery. She's running around screaming and smashing all the crockery. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was added to kind of add a bit of action and shouting. Okay. On.
But interesting.
It's just actually, if we're going to talk about the weakest bits, I thought that was the weakest bit. I don't know. That whole bit where she's just running around. I mean,
yeah.
The fact it's just smashed, I don't know.
It's a bit over the top.
It was a bit over the top. I know, yeah, I'm sure stuff like that. I'm sure people do react like that in real life, but I think it was just that it was just noisy. They're also running around and both characters screaming at the top of their voices and then smashing crockery.
Yeah, it was quite powerful, though. I mean,
yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
But you just couldn't believe the stupidity of this man.
I know.
Do you know who her dad is? Do you know who her dad is?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I did think that. I was like, although he is, they say he's kept at arm's length from the business, isn't he?
Yes,
he makes a decision, not to involve him too heavily in the fact, you know, give him a job, but don't discuss business in front of him.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So, got a great idea for a movie, Lewis?
I've got a lukewarm idea for a movie. I've got a half-baked idea for a movie.
Right, okay. all right, well, brilliant. Well, let's say it. perhaps rather than get Kurt Humphrey III to justice, perhaps we'll have Zardoz to justice.
That would be good. I think Zardoz would provide good judgment.
Zardoz!
Hello, Zardoz. so the idea was basically...
Zardoz!
Are you going to do that all the way through?
Every yourself then, yeah.
Okay, good. So basically...
Sorry, just while we did that, we just knocked a butterfly puzzle that Lewis has got out on his table.
Don't talk about the puzzle.
His girlfriend have put
together.
Don't
talk about the puzzle. I'm going to cut this bit out. Okay, so basically... I was thinking that, you know, why have a perfectly decent film trilogy when you could spin out a fourth version and make a load of money for the studio despite making a very poor film? So what I was thinking, you know, Indiana Jones did it. We've had several Alien films. So Godfather Part 4, set in the modern day. Family have finally escaped crime, gone into IT consultancy.
Is there a pun at the end of this? Zardoz demands an answer.
There can be if Zardoz wants a pun.
There better be a pun. There better be. If that's it, they go into IT consultancy.
Well, there was more to... I don't know if I can be bothered to go into this. I think Zardoz is a bit critical.
Well, I thought... And they were going to call it the...
Yeah.
Codefellas?
The Codefather.
The Codefather.
It was the Codefather.
It wasn't going to be the Codefather.
It was the Codefather. I'm not sure I can go into this. My other idea was just substituting Francis Ford Coppola films for cow-based jokes. Apocalypse Cow, The Codfather.
No.
Oh.
Zardoz says no.
I don't think it was very good this week.
No.
I got stuck when I was trying to think of a cow-based joke for Rumblefish.
Right. thank you, Lewis. So.
Okay, that wasn't my best. I might cut that bit out.
Keep the bit about the butterfly puzzle.
No, definitely.
right. Worst bits? Are there any worst bits? Not really.
I don't think so. It's all gold.
As I say, I mean. Just the scene with the big kind of domestic abuse argument bit with the plate smashing, that was a little bit. Yeah.
There weren't enough.
Say that was terrible.
Weren't enough giant flying stone heads.
No, yeah, there is no character wore a nappy, but other than that,
not enough nudity.
No.
Or mud wrestling.
There was only one scene of nudity.
So yeah, I marked it down for that.
One point less. But I mean, it's got. I think it's the highest rated on Rotten Tomatoes film overall, on its, the metric score, whatever they call it.
I can well imagine that. I saw on IMDb it was something like 9.2 or something.
Yeah. But, there's always going to be some people out
there.
There's
always going to be someone marking it down.
It's actually quite a good...
Idiots like me marking it down 1 point because it didn't have enough nudity.
Yeah. There's actually, it's quite a good thing, quite a good game to play actually, is to go on Amazon and look at, you know, things that are considered classics and then just read the one-star reviews, because pretty much anything you would think of that's considered a classic, whether that be album, book or film, will have a couple of people who write really arsey one-star reviews of that. Is there anything that you think is vastly overrated?
Oh,
is there a film?
Loads of things.
Is there a film? Let's narrow it down. A film that you that is considered by most people an absolute classic.
Oh my god! Like one that stands out straight away. I was thinking when Evita was the biggest pile of dog turd I've ever seen.
What, with Madonna?
Yeah,
I don't know. Is that...
I don't think that was quite.
No,
that wasn't rated. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of really bad films that I've seen.
Well, I would say.
Oh, I know one. Oh no, it's gone.
Right, okay, I would say for me, A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah,
I think he's not... massively overrated.
Yeah, definitely. It got a reputation because it got banned.
Yeah.
But actually,
it's not that good.
Yeah.
It really isn't. There's bits of it which are just outright awful.
Yeah.
There's bits of it that are good.
Yeah.
But most of it is pretty poor.
The book's really good.
The book is fantastic. I'd be willing to support a remake of The Clockwork Orange. I imagine when they talk about that, people say, how can you do that?
Can you make it better?
But I reckon, yeah.
You could do a modern day version, it'd be really good. The ideas are there.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of this kind of gang culture that's completely subversive and is completely at odds with the mainstream society. I mean, that could work really well at any time, really.
Especially nowadays, I know.
Especially nowadays with all the...
rights.
Contemporary. I can't think of any. There must be loads.
I'm sure there is.
I can't think of any others right now.
No. Well,
Almost Famous, I watched that the other day. That was alright.
Yeah. Well, that's not got the damning indictment that I was expecting. I mean, let's be honest, your critical faculties can be a little bit off. Your big Adam Sandler obsession.
Why do you have to bring him up again?
Your butterfly puzzles.
Don't bring up the butterfly puzzles. I tell you what, I'm not going to have you round again. just trouble.
At one point, we're going to have to sit on the floor because of the butterfly puzzle, because we couldn't move the butterfly puzzle and put the laptop on it.
It is a bit bigger than I thought it would be.
Bigger than you would expect a butterfly puzzle to be.
Yeah, this is a gift from my aunt, I should point out.
She knows that Lewis loves butterflies.
Oh, dear.
So would you recommend The Godfather?
Yeah. why are you even asking me? Yeah, of course I would.
Because that's one of our bits. We finish on whether we recommend it.
Jesus!
And I would recommend it too.
Good.
I wouldn't, yeah, most time. I think pretty much every film we've done so far, I've added certain provisos. I've said, yes, I would, but I would explain this, or I'd warn them about that.
Yeah, yeah. Or,
and I don't really think there's anything to warn about The Godfather.
No.
It's pretty much perfect.
Yep.
Well done, Francis Ford Coppola.
Well done. That was a little bit sarcastic. Sarcastic clapping.
Doing Francis Ford Coppola right now, it's just... Oh, just taking his headphones out of that bit. Like, the whole thing was a joke. I mean, sarcastic the entire time. It's that dry British wit. Yeah, I just don't get it.
Oh, dear. It's funny, actually. I mean, I was looking back through Francis Ford Coppola's filmography, and it's quite patchy. It's patchy to say the least, isn't it? Really.
Yeah.
But when he's on form, blimey, he's good. We're gonna have to do Apocalypse Now at some point, because you haven't seen that, have you?
No.
That's a definite one for the list. We'll do that. We'll probably do it towards the end, though, to space them out a bit.
Yeah. Another. Well, can we do the 7-hour version? Didn't they do a version, or is that Platoon?
Probably,
just the sheer amount of footage Apocalypse Now they did. There is a like a 7-hour version floating around somewhere. Actually, that makes me think, before we finish, what I was really interested to read was how he re-edited the three Godfather films into a big TV special and put them all in chronological order.
So he put the sequences
involving presumably the chunks of Godfather 2.
Yep.
About the past at the beginning, then Godfather, then bits of the Godfather 2 that feature Michael after that. I don't really know anything. I know Godfather 3 is considered very quite weak. Yes, or...
I haven't actually seen that one. No, yet, so it's one for me. I've got it. I've got to watch it.
Yeah. But I thought, how weird is that? And he kind of cut. You've made it suitable for TV by taking out some of the kind of more violent sequences or any kind of sexy business.
Sexy business. Yeah. No sexy business on our TV channel.
But it just shows you sometimes directors can't be trusted with their own source material.
Yeah,
just
George Lucas.
Well, he's mates with George Lucas, isn't he? Yeah. That's what probably was like. Yeah, do it for TV and have a Jamaican fish man running around. It would be great if. It'd be great if Michael's best pal was a Jamaican fishman, a racist Jamaican fishman.
Go back and CGI him in,
and maybe rather than have all the gangsters carrying guns, they could just carry walkie-talkies. Right. So that's it, really, everyone.
Weekending, isn't it? It's about weekending. That's it, really.
Follow us on the blog.
Oh, yeah, follow us on the blog. Go to our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.wordpress.com and email us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
Well, look at that.
That's good. That was like going live style.
You
fantastic.
Can follow us on Twitter.
0891... Oh, no, that's not right. That's party chat. 0891... 50, 50, 50.
Girls, willing to party chat, willing to speak to you. God, they were different. Do they still have those, or have the internet killed those?
They probably still have them. I'm sure they do. There's plenty of lonely old men out there who are willing to run up huge
internet access. Yeah.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook.
Yeah, that's about it.
That's it. Have a good week.
Yeah. See you. Bye.
Bye.